Kunja Vihari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Vihari. Jai Gopi Jana Vallabha Girivara Dhari. Jai Gopi Jana Vallabha Girivara Dhari. Yashoda Nandana Braja Jana Ranjana Yashoda Nandana Braja Jana Ranjana Jamuna Tira Vanachari Jamuna Tira Vanachari Jai Radha Madhava Kunja Vihari Jai Radha Madhava Kunja Vihari Jai Gopi Jana Vallabha Girivara Dhari Gopi Jana Vallabha Girivara Dhari Yashoda Nandana Braja Jana Ranjana Yashoda Nandana Braja Jana Ranjana Jamuna Tira Vanachari Jamuna Tira Vanachari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Vihari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Vihari Jaya Gopi Jana Vallabha Girivara Dhari Jaya Gopi Jana Vallabha Girivara Dhari Yashoda Nandana Braja Jana Ranjana Yashoda Nandana Braja Jana Ranjana Jamuna Tira Vanachari Yamuna Tira Vanachari. Jai Om Vishnu Pad Paramahamsa Parivraj Kacharya Ashtutara Shata Shri Shrimad His Divine Grace Abhay Charan Aravinda Bhakti Vedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Jai Om Vishnu Pad Paramahamsa Parivraj Kacharya Ashtutara Shata Shri Shrimad His Divine Grace Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Sarasati Thakur Prabhupada Ki Jai. Ananta Koti Vaishnava Vrinda Ki Jai. Namacharya Srila Haridas Thakur Ki Jai. Premse Kaho Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Ki Jai. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories Shri Guru and Shri Gauranga Jai Srila Prabhupada Namah. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate
Vasudevaya. So today we read from Chapter 3 of the Bhagavad Gita as it is. Text 10. Chapter is entitled Karma Yoga. So the verse reads, Saha yagya prajas shishtva puruvacha prajapati anena prasavishyadvam eshovo stvishta kama duk. Translation. In the beginning of creation, the Lord of all creatures sent forth generations of men and demigods, along with sacrifices for Vishnu, and blessed them by saying, Be thou happy by this yajna, sacrifice, because its performance will bestow upon you everything desirable for living happily and achieving liberation. Purport. The material creation by the Lord of creatures, Vishnu, is a chance offered to the conditioned souls to come back to home, back to Godhead. All living entities within the material creation are conditioned by material nature because of their forgetfulness of their relationship to Vishnu or Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The Vedic principles are to The Vedic principles are to help us understand this eternal relation as it is stated in the Bhagavad Gita, Vedaishya Sarvair Aham Eva Vedya. The Lord says that the purpose of the Vedas is to understand Him. In the Vedic hymns it is said, Pating Vishvasyat Mare Vishvasyat Meshvaram. Therefore, the Lord of the living entities is the Supreme Personality of Godhead Vishnu. In the Srimad Bhagavatam also, 2.4.20, Srila Shukadeva Goswami describes the Lord as Pati, which means father, in so many ways. Shriyapatir, Yagyapati, Prajapatir, Diyampatir, Lokapatir, Dharapratir, Patir Gatish, Chandaka Vrishni Satvatam, Prasidatam Me Bhagavan Satam Pati. The Prajapati is Lord Vishnu, and He is the Lord of all living entities, all living creatures, all worlds, and all beauties, and the protector of everyone. The Lord created this material world to enable the conditioned souls to learn how to perform yajnas, sacrifices, for the satisfaction of Vishnu, so that while in the material world they can live very comfortably, without anxiety, and after finishing the present material body they can enter into the kingdom of God. That is the whole program for the conditioned soul. By performance of yajna, the conditioned souls gradually become Krishna conscious and become godly in all respects. In the age of Kali, the Sankirtan yajna, the chanting of the names of God, is recommended by the Vedic scriptures, and this transcendental system was introduced by Lord Chaitanya for the deliverance of all men in this age. Sankirtan Yajna and Krishna consciousness go well together. Lord Krishna, in his devotional form as Lord Chaitanya, is mentioned in the Srimad Bhagavatam as follows, with special reference to the Sankirtan Yajna. Krishna Varanam Trija Krishnam Sangopangastra Parshadam Yajyai Sankirtana Prayar Yajantihi Sumeda Saha. In this age of Kali, people who are endowed with sufficient intelligence will worship the Lord who is accompanied by his associates by performance of Sankirtan Yajna. Other yajnas prescribed in the Vedic literatures are not easy to perform in this age of Kali, but the Sankirtan Yajna is easy and sublime for all purposes, as recommended in the Bhagavad Gita also. Om Ajnana Timiranthasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. So this verse is, and the purport especially, are very instructive. And the title of this chapter is two of the most recognized Sanskrit words in the English language, karma and yoga. So these two things everyone in the West has heard, even though they may not have heard of Sankirtan Yajna. So the chapter begins when Arjuna asks Krishna a question. Now, many times when we read the Bhagavad Gita, we think it is some kind of philosophical treatise, but actually it is a conversation, it is a discourse, it is a question and answer session, you might say, between Krishna and his devotee Arjuna, because Arjuna is confused and confounded by the situation in which he finds himself, as are we all in this material world. We are so much in doubt as to what is the correct path we should follow and what we should do and what we should not do in this world. And in the first text, Arjuna asks Krishna, O Janardhan, O Keshava, why do you engage me in this ghastly warfare if you think that intelligence is better than fruit of work? My intelligence is bewildered by your equivocal instructions. Therefore, please tell me decisively which will be beneficial for me. So this is Arjuna's question. Because in the previous chapter, in chapters 1 and 2, so Krishna has, in a sense, demolished Arjuna's arguments that he puts up. He says, why should I engage in warfare? Because this warfare is not going to end well. Many, many people will be killed. And the situation was that warriors had come from every society on the planet, practically. And they were the protectors of those societies where they lived. And once they were killed, if they were killed in battle, which they were certain to be, as we understand, as even Krishna understood, Arjuna understood, then those societies in which they were the protectors would be devastated. There would be great upheavals, and there would the general population would be left defenseless against thieves and rogues and or the general evildoers, as they're called, of society. So Arjuna's recommending that actually I should not fight, I should go to the forest, I should become a renunciate and practice nonviolence, ahimsa. I should be that kind of person, because that will be actually more beneficial for society. And so Krishna has demolished this argument in many ways in the previous chapters. And his essence is that we should do our duty, and in this way we will attain happiness. He's explained to Arjuna that we are not these bodies. This temporary material situation in which we find ourselves is not the all-in-all. There's a higher transcendent purpose to life. And you will attain that transcendence. You will find that purpose if you perform your duty. But Arjuna's question in this case is not without merit. It's not without some substantial questioning, because In the previous chapter, Krishna comes up with all these different analogies and metaphors of how a transcendental person, how a spiritual person behaves. And so he tells him, as a lamp in a windless place does not waver, so a man in fixed consciousness is not disturbed. As a tortoise withdraws his limbs, so a man in spiritual consciousness withdraws his senses from the work, withdraws himself from the work of the senses. As the ocean doesn't overstep its bounds, even though so many rivers are flowing into it, just as a person, we have so many desires, rivers of desires are flowing into our consciousness at all times. And he says that a man of fixed consciousness is not affected by these streams of sense perception that flow into his mind. And then he says, when your consciousness is passed out of this dense forest of delusion, you'll become indifferent to all that has been heard and all that is to be heard. So Arjuna interprets this kind of inaction as a direction to abandon work, to abandon his the whole idea is he uses terms like indifference and withdrawing the senses. And these are all interpreted by Arjuna, in this case, as inaction. So this is his understanding. So the question is, as we say, not without merit. So then Krishna explains to him that not merely by abstaining from work can one achieve freedom from reaction. He says that by only renunciation, one cannot achieve perfection. So this is, again, it's a paradox. How does this work exactly in the material world? And Krishna says to him, perform your duty and be equipoised. And the term he used for equipoise is yoga sta. Yoga, as we know, means linking with Krishna. And sta means to be standing, to be fixed. You know, it's interesting that this word sta, it also arises in the Greek language. When we use the term ecstasy, that ex means out of, and sta means standing. So ecstasy means to be standing out of the all the troubles and all the streams of distractions of the material world. Yoga sta. So he's explaining here, yoga sta, be equipoised, and siddhi asidyo. So siddhi, the word means perfection or completion. And asiddhi asidyo, it means failure, success and failure. So if you remain equipoised in success and failure, then you will be transcendental, and this equanimity that you will have, that is called yoga. So that is what yoga actually means. And now Krishna, he starts to analyze what is the material world and how is it working? How is it actually doing everything? And he says, everyone is forced to act helplessly according to the qualities he acquires from the modes of material nature. The modes of material nature in which we find ourselves force us to act, and he says, helplessly. Therefore, no one can refrain from doing something, not even for a moment. No one can be totally inactive. It is not possible. Even the yoga of meditation, where yogis sit in a fixed position in asana, and they perform meditation, they fix the mind, they control the body first. Then they control the breathing, and then by this control of the breathing, control of the body, then comes control of the mind through meditation, and they fix themselves on the now. And this is the famous Buddhist thing, to be here now, to be in the present, to be immediate. Because if you're thinking of the past, then you're always lamenting. You're always lamenting for something that you've lost, when you in the past. And if you're thinking of the future, then you're always hankering for something that you want to happen in the future, whatever it is. So therefore, the Buddhists, in order to adopt nirvana, no forest of enjoyment, no forest of the senses, so therefore they want to be here now, strictly in the moment, meditating in that way. And that is their prescription for attaining nirvana, for becoming Buddha, for becoming the Buddha. So as we say, the Buddha, he became enlightened by sitting and meditating under the Bodhi tree. And here, as we'll see further on, Krishna is explaining to Arjuna that for him, his Bodhi tree is the battle of Kurukshetra. See? And his meditation is his performance of his duty, of his action in Krishna consciousness. That is the key to the understanding of this karma yoga, of this karma yoga chapter. And there are many other situations. So there is a verse here that says, perform your prescribed duty, for doing so is better than not working. One cannot even maintain one's physical body without work. So this is a key factor, because people often think that, spiritual life and spiritual practices, these are something ethereal. These are something on the mental or some kind of higher platform that really nobody knows much about. And it's so you get a spiritual master and he'll be able to tell you what's in these ethereal realms that will make you perfect, that will make you become a transcendental personality. But Krishna is explaining, no, actually, action, you cannot even eat without working. You have to act. Even if you're the richest man in the world, you still have to tell the servants, please bring my food. Otherwise, you're not going to be able to eat. You know. So even that work is prescribed for the richest person. And what to speak of the rest of us. So we have to, so this is a, again, it's a very basic understanding that Krishna gives. He, on the one hand is the highest philosophy, and on the other hand is a very practical everyday work-a-day situation that Krishna explains to us. And then Krishna explains, work done as a sacrifice for Vishnu has to be performed. Otherwise, work causes bondage in this material world. So the bondage of this material world, these are the laws of karma. These are the laws of reincarnation and transmigration of the soul, how karma works. And this is interesting that in this verse, this is the first time that Krishna mentions the word yajna in the Bhagavad Gita. It comes up further on, but this is the first time. So Krishna is now introducing a new concept to Arjuna in this way. And so is a very sophisticated understanding of how to dovetail our needs and desires so that they become a sacrifice for Vishnu. And in the purport to this verse, Srila Prabhupada describes that this requires expert guidance. This is not a beginner's course. This is something that we have to find a spiritual master. We have to understand the scriptures and what they say about yajna. And we have to also understand from the pure devotees, from the acharyas that have come before us. And so then, just to repeat, so then Krishna comes to today's verse, and just to repeat that translation. In the beginning of creation, the Lord of all creatures sent forth generations of men and demigods along with sacrifices for Vishnu and blessed them by saying, be thou happy by this yajna, because its performance will bestow upon you everything desirable for living happily and achieving liberation. So we know that this Sankirtan yajna, actually this is the goal of the Sankirtan yajna, is to bestow upon us everything desirable for living happily and achieving liberation. That is such an incredible realization that we should have, that this chanting of the holy names, it's a very simple, one doesn't see, and I often think about this, how one doesn't see that the result of chanting Hare Krishna, this will be the result. Because generally in this material world, we work for something and we get a reward. How does this chanting of the holy name create this reward of happiness and liberation? This is why it requires an expert, a spiritual master, to engage us in this practice. And it's also significant that when we think of the creation of the universe, mostly the scientific community, they think of how. How did this universe happen? Was it a big bang? How did this universe come about? But Krishna, he doesn't go there. He goes into why was this universe created? And this is much more important for the living entities. It may be important for the material bodies, for the scientists to understand how, but it's actually more important for us as active participants in this world, why we should do what we do. And so Krishna explains the purpose of life. And as we said, unless we understand the purpose of life, we will have doubt and we will have fear. And as Krishna explains further on, for the doubting soul, there is happiness neither in this life nor in the next. So this is the problem of doubt. And Arjuna has big doubts because he's a big man and he's in a very big situation here. And so his doubt is overwhelming. And so Krishna has now to explain this whole purpose of yajna, this whole understanding of yajna. And so the next three verses deal with the demigods and how the material arrangement works. That by performance of yajna, the demigods will be pleased. When the demigods are pleased, the rain will fall, everything will be proper with your climate situation, and because of that, you'll be able to grow food, and you'll be able to live and prosper. And it says here, the demigods, being pleased by sacrifices, will also please you, and thus, by cooperation between men and demigods, prosperity will reign for all. This is a key point, actually, in Krishna consciousness, is that, and it's so much different to the kind of rat race, dog-eat-dog world that we see outside that is happening, because cooperation is the key. Cooperation between the different classes, between the different varnas, between the different ashrams, between people in general, that cooperation is the most important feature of Krishna consciousness. And in our Krishna consciousness society, we should also take this to heart, that the more we try to cooperate with each other, the better the outcome will be for our Krishna consciousness and for the Krishna consciousness of others. And there's a famous saying of Prabhupada before leaving, that your success will be measured by how much you all cooperate together. So, and here we can see it. Krishna is explaining this in the Bhagavad Gita. It is not just Prabhupada's whimsical idea, oh, these guys can't get along, therefore, I'll tell them to cooperate or something. No, actually, this is coming from Krishna. Can't we all just get along kind of saying. This is more than that. No. So, and then text 13, which I call the Prasadam verse, is that devotees are released from all kinds of sin because they eat food which is offered first for sacrifice. Others who prepare food for personal enjoyment verily eat only sin. So here is, again, it's a very, Krishna gets down to the brass tacks. that you've got to eat, and therefore when you eat, you should eat as a sacrifice to Vishnu. You should offer your foodstuffs as a sacrifice to Vishnu, and then there will be all prosperity and happiness. So it is a very key verse, and much quoted by Srila Prabhupada also. And by the performance of Sankirtan Yajna, we will be able also. So this Sankirtan Yajna, it's also described in this verse, that the Yajnas are also determined, Prabhupada says, according to the nine processes of devotional service. So we have Shravanam Kirtanam, Vishnu Smaranam, Pada Sevanam, Archanam Dasyam Sakyam, Atmani Vedanam, like that. So these, all these deity worship, all these things are sacrifices. You know, I see the devotees, they come every day and they make a wonderful presentation of their service to Krishna, of these beautiful deities, and the wonderful service that they do. It's so inspiring. And it's done so much in a service of cooperation and surrender. And it's done so regularly and so nicely. So this is a key for the different yajnas in Krishna consciousness. And then one of the most often quoted verses by Srila Prabhupada, Anad Bhavanti Bhutani. All bodies subsist on food grains. So even in the, the point was made that this is the most basic understanding of human life, is that we have to eat. And what's interesting when Krishna goes on, and he describes that regulated activities, which are the key to controlling the senses, are prescribed in the Vedas, and the Vedas are directly manifested by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Consequently, the all-pervading transcendence is eternally situated in acts of sacrifice. So here, Krishna, in a sense, he's contradicting himself. And this is, again, another paradox for Arjuna to deal with. Because in the previous chapter, Krishna has told him that the Vedas deal mainly with the three modes of material nature. And one must transcend these three modes of material nature. Nistraigunya bhavarjuna. One should rise above the three modes of material nature. And yet here, Krishna is recommending, you should follow these prescribed duties of the Vedas. So in that sense, it's like a contradiction. So gradually, Krishna is leading Arjuna to, leading him to the final conclusion of the Bhagavad Gita, of how to adjust his situation, how to adjust his mindset so that he actually achieves siddhi, he achieves his perfection of life. And Krishna says that one who does not follow in human life the cycle of sacrifice thus established by the Vedas certainly leads a life full of sin. Living only for the satisfaction of the senses, such a person lives in vain. In other words, all the sense gratification that people are pursuing, all the sense gratification, it's all a waste of time. And this material world in general, it is unfortunate, but it is all a waste of time. However, if we understand Krishna's meaning, if we understand the purpose of life, then we can transcend, then we can begin to transcend this thing. And it culminates actually in chapter 12, chapter on Bhakti Yoga, where Krishna explains the different levels of achievement in devotional service, the different levels that one has to understand. And he says, first of all, those who are on the topmost level, though, if you want to be on the topmost level, you should think of Krishna 24 hours a day. Krishna should be your sole meditation, and you should not have any other purpose or direction in life. See, that's a tall order. And so he says, but if you can't do that, then you should have a spiritual master, find a spiritual master who understands, follow his instructions, follow the rules and regulations of bhakti yoga, and in that way, you will make advancement. And you will reach that platform of 24-hour absorption in Krishna consciousness. And they said, but if you can't do that, right? He said, you should, whatever work you perform, you should give the fruits of that labor to Krishna in some way or another. Whether if you're working for money, or if you want to use your time properly, you should do it as much as possible in service to Krishna. But if you can't do that, he says, well, then whatever fruits you get from your activities, from your labor, you should just give to others. And we see this in the material world. Very rich men, they often do that. They often actually come to that realization. People like Bill Gates, and they have these foundations, and they say, and they actually canvass all their rich friends that you should give 50% for charity, for the advancement of society in some way or another. And they do it because they have some inkling, some understanding that wealth requires also there is obligation. If you have wealth, you have obligations. And so therefore, they perform that sacrifice. They're not doing it as we would like them to do it in Krishna consciousness, but at least they're doing it. So this is a cause. So in some way, at least they're making some advancement. But Krishna says, if you can't do that, if you can't just give up the fruits of your labor, then you should cultivate knowledge. So by reading these scriptures, by understanding this philosophy, by cultivating this understanding of Krishna and Krishna consciousness, then all the other things will come. That is Krishna's final prescription. So whatever status of life we find ourselves in, you know, it's very easy, you know, if you do a little self-examination to find out, well, I'm in that slot, you know, and I guess I should, you know, try to get better, you know. But as Krishna explains, the material world is here. The senses, the desires, the flow of these distractions in life are always there, and we may become subject to them. But the way to release oneself from this is through the chanting of the holy names. So that's our main prescription in Krishna consciousness. And there's a nice part later on in this chapter where Krishna explains that, actually, I do a lot of work. You know, I maintain this creation. I, you know, see that everything goes right. Because if I didn't do my duty, people would follow me. And the whole world would be led to ruination. So therefore, even I'm working. So you should also do your duty in that way. So it's a nice... even though he says that for a realized person, there's no duty to perform, but he does it anyway to educate and lead people to spiritual advancement. And the irony is that Krishna says that by doing my duty, I'm saving the world from ruination. Whereas Arjuna's argument is exactly the opposite. You know, if I go to the forest and renounce, then I'm saving the world from ruination, you know. So it's a nice way that Krishna is always correcting Arjuna, you know, from this initial premise of his that I should just become a renunciate and go to the forest. So it's very nice to see the Bhagavad Gita, to see this in the light of these two great friends who are having a discourse and in a sense an argument with each other. And there's so many things I could go on, but leave it there for now. And if there are any questions that anybody would like to ask. Yes, brother.
I think it was nice to see...
Oh, the mic is there.
I think it's nice for us to see that the pure devotee, when a disciple comes to the to a bona fide spiritual master, he also can see into the heart of that young aspirant and find out what his dharma is or what he's best suited for, and somehow or other engage him so that by that engagement, not only does he have a peaceful mind, but he can progress in Krishna consciousness.
That is the function of the guru in the Varnashram system. The children, they go to the Gurukula, the place of the guru. And so therefore, the function of the guru is to understand the direction of that child and train him up for his future profession, for his future duties, and for the future sacrifices he will have to perform in order to become self-realized, in order to make advancement. Because we understand that, in general, people take birth in this material world not because they're pure devotees, but because they're something else. And it's that something else that the guru understands and directs the student so that he can make advancement. So that is a key aspect. There's a nice description of Srila Prabhupada that he made when they were discussing the philosophy of Plato. Plato had a philosophy of the New Republic, because and he said that by division of society into the Brahmins, the Kshatriyas, and Plato only had three. He regarded the merchants and the workers as kind of like the same class. But he had this philosophy. So Srila Prabhupada said, so how does it work? How is he going to work? How is he going to educate people? So what is his education system? And so they explained, well, from age 5 to age 7, the children are taught songs and reading and so on, and then from 7 till 12 they're taught academic subjects, and 12 till 16, and then at 14 or 15, I forget exactly the sequence, but then they have military service, see? And so Srila Prabhupada asked everyone, and he said, Plato said everyone should have military service, because then after they've been through these different stages, then people will know what they are and know their particular dharma. So Prabhupada said, well, this is a false understanding. Because Plato, although he understood that it was transmigration of the soul, although he understood that people were born in different bodies according to their karma of their previous life, he didn't understand how it worked. By proper schooling, the guru would know that this person, he's meant to be a soldier. And other people who are not meant to be soldiers shouldn't do military service, because it's just a waste of time. It's a waste of their time, and it's a waste of the military's time for these people to be engaged in that way. So this was the fault of Plato's philosophy, of Plato's understanding, was that he didn't understand that from a previous birth, the guru will understand, oh, this person is a Kshatriya, this person is a Brahmin, this person is a Vaishya, this person is a Shudra. From that, from his propensities as a child, these are coming from the previous life. And so that's the function, really, of the guru. So we can see in the case of Arjuna, this was such a, in a way, ordered society that Arjuna, that having been born as a Kshatriya and having been trained up as a Kshatriya, this was his duty, this was his Svadharma. And his family understood this, his guru Dronacharya understood this, and therefore he was perfectly situated in that Dharma, in that ashram, and in that Varna as a warrior. So this is This is the understanding. This is how we have to understand it. Prabhupada explaining that, I thought that was very instructive as to what a Gurukula is actually for and how it should actually work. Yes, Prabhu.
I'm asking you this question because there's somebody here in the crowd here that came to my house this morning, and they're very confused. And somehow or the other, they think that they need some enlightenment from this temple. The person came to this temple before. I brought the person to the temple, and the person is here now. I wouldn't like to call him out, no one. But he's a little confused and needs some advice. And he doesn't know which way to go. I just tell him, well, you have to start to chant Hare Krishna, chant the mantra. But I don't know if you could talk a little bit about a situation like that.
Well, we understand that Krishna, whatever the question, in one sense, Krishna is the answer. So somehow linking with Krishna, somehow understanding that I have a personal relationship with Krishna, and Krishna has a personal relationship with me. It's not that it's just a one-way street, I pray and pray and then nothing happens. But no, if we're really sincere, then Krishna will reciprocate with us. And it may seem very, as this verse said, by performance of this yajna, of this sacrifice for Krishna, this sacrifice of chanting the holy names, we will attain all peace and understanding of this world, understanding of our situation. And it is a gradual process. It's not that it happens overnight, because we actually have to a little bit try to come towards Krishna. And every step we take towards Krishna, we know that Krishna will take so many steps toward us. So that is the key. Whatever the confusion, or whatever the doubt, or whatever the material situation, Krishna explains in Bhagavad Gita in the 7th chapter, Arto jigyasur artarti jnani cha bharatarshava, that there are four kinds of people who approach Krishna. People who are in distress, people who want something, some material advancement, people who, Arto jigyasur artarti, and then people who are in knowledge, and what was the fourth one?
Curious.
And the curious, that's right. So these four classes of people, and if we understand who we are, that, oh, I am in terrible distress, I should therefore try to surrender to Krishna, try to approach Krishna in this way. And that the way that we have is the chanting of the holy names. That is the foremost way. Of course, there are other. There are 9 processes of devotional service. There's, archanam das, shravanam kirtanam vishnu smaranam, that to remember Krishna. Hearing, chanting, and remembering Krishna. Archanam, deity worship to Krishna. Dasyam, service to Krishna. And so on. So these different processes are there, depending on what our situation is, what our personality is, and how we can make, how we can surrender to that process. Is that?
Yeah. Yeah, well, so far you got the Bhagavad Gita. It came to you.
Yeah.
You start to read it. Maybe I want to.
Yeah. 9 months. So with the philosophy and with the chanting, we know that people's lives do change, and change very radically. Well, we are very much an agent of change in that way. Yes?
I would just like to say he's talking about me, and I'm not afraid to step forward and say he is speaking about me. The reason why I'm here today is because I've had several visions where I've seen other places, and I've been in places and heard voices. And it isn't the fact that I am seeking anything, but that I've been seeing things and that I've you can say that Vishnu came to me. My life is very simple. I'm just a simple country boy. I study religions and stuff like that, but I don't go to church. I'm not that type of person. But I received a message and visions, and I have a hard time saying visions because it feels funny coming off the tip of my tongue. But yes, I've seen other places and seen and heard things, and it wasn't out of curiosity, but it was out of something in my heart that tells me to do things, and I'm the type of person that does what I'm told in my heart. And I've been on a spiritual journey for the last 10 years that's led me to several different places in my life. My daughter goes to school with his daughter, and that's how I came to meet Mr. Singh. And when I met him, he invited me to come to temple. I come to temple once before. I guess it was 2 years ago. It's been a while. And this is the first place that I found where people were gathering for a spiritual nature more than a community. And so what I really did was I was up till 2 o'clock in the morning talking to my wife about this, and I told her it was time for me to take a step in the direction that I was told to take. And the reason why I seem confused and very emotional over this is because in these visions, I seen myself doing things that are outside of my character. And I need to talk to somebody about it. So that's why I'm here today, is because I know in my heart that I was supposed to come here for counseling. As you were saying, I may have to seek out, you know, somebody with the proper, you know, I need to seek out my guru that can guide me and show me where I'm going without, you know, the hesitation and fear of the ego. So that's why I'm here today. I need to talk to somebody specifically about these visions and specifically what happened within those visions. And I need to know, I just need to express it and good. See if I can find some guidance for that.
Okay. We can speak afterwards also. Thank you. Wow, that's very fortunate. Fortunate for them and fortunate for you. Yeah. He said that it was very strange that yesterday four people approached him to wanting the Bhagavad Gita. So, anyway, so that's very fortunate for them and fortunate for you also. So we can oblige them, I'm sure. Yes, Prabhu.
Answering to or referring to Ajamil Prabhu's question, I think we need to have in common, either we are a neophyte devotee or a very advanced devotee. One thing is a common understanding is we should know that Lord Krishna is real.
Yes.
When we know Lord Krishna is real, the real spiritual journey starts there. Till then, it is bumpy. When we know or we are convinced that Krishna is real, then the real spiritual journey starts. That's when you start getting enlightenment.
The reality of Krishna. So, you know, how to attain that in this world? You know, because Krishna says even the great yogis, simply by their penances and austerities, they are not given entrance into the spiritual understanding of Krishna. It's not by penances and austerities alone, but it is also, it's just like, I was just hearing this morning in the class, they were playing this tape of different devotees' realizations, and this one devotee said that Prabhupada was at this program, and he was asked by a lady in the audience, she asked, Swamiji, do you see Krishna? And Prabhupada said, yes, do you? And Prabhupada explained, Krishna is everywhere. Why you're not seeing Krishna? because he's everywhere. So that sort of was a nice, and the lady became a little bit embarrassed that she had asked that question. But still, I'm sure that Srila Prabhupada was, you know, so expert in answering that question, you know, that she had a great realization from that. The question is, do you want to see Krishna? And then she became really embarrassed. Yes, you know. So that was a nice story from this program that Prabhupada was at. Is there anything else? Thank you very much indeed. Hare Krishna.